If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast platforms. YouTube, like, subscribe there as well. Joining me today, Iman Adan. Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
It's my sing-songy intro. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I just watched Little Mermaid with the new one. And so I'm kind of in a sing-songy mood. My daughter was just like ecstatic watching it. She's watching it all the time. She's walking around going, So, yeah, that might be
one. I feel you. I love that movie. And definitely just sang entire, and I can't sing. I'm very bad at it. But, you know, Halle Bailey made me want to be a singer for a little bit.
So you are walking around going,
Oh, for sure. Beautiful. I want to be a part of your world.
Melissa McCarthy was a bit of a downer in that movie. I'm just going to say that right there. I don't want to, like, you know, no reason to go into being critical of the actors, but she kind of was a downer for me in the film. I gotta say, she just didn't really bring it the way I thought that an Ursula should.
Maybe. Hey, my 4-year-old niece watched it and was like, she still looks like a cartoon. And I'm like, well, they can't really make her into an octopus.
True.
Don't fault her for that. But yeah, she apparently was not a huge fan of Melissa McCarthy in the movie.
Well, that makes two of us. So, awkward segue. Team Canada wrapped up their FIBA Basketball World Cup with, they beat the United States. And Dylan Brooks going into the game after they had lost to Serbia. He sent a group text to the folks and he said, hey, this is what we wanted. We wanted to beat the United States. And they did. And now, granted, no Jaren Jackson, no Paolo Banchero. They both had some sort of illness. Not sure what happened there, but they obviously would have been very useful against the Canadians. But hey, it is what it is. Canada finishes with the bronze. What's that?
I said, you play who's in front of you. You don't
exactly.
You don't pick. People we are a fan of, moving on from Melissa McCarthy. What Canada did, I mean, we made history. Like, that was a Canadian history moment. I say we as though I'm on the team. But no, Canada made history. And it was so incredibly impressive watching them from start to finish. And really watching this team come under Jody Fernandez in such short time to do what they were able to do. It was a lot of fun. And you know that, like, watching, I think to me, what was so special watching it from home is how many people got up at 4:30 to watch the game. Like, I turn on Twitter and I'm seeing all the same people who are tweeting during 7:30 Raptor games up at 4:30 to watch the same thing. And it's just like, in order to get an entire country to be that infectious over basketball is always really, really fun because, yeah, this is still a hockey nation, but watching people get excited about basketball is great. And we're seeing it happen.
Yeah. I admittedly, I did miss the USA game. I was in Niagara Falls. I was away. The summer goes on. So it is what it is. But I did watch it. And
as long as you were on the Canadian side of Niagara Falls, you're fine. On the American side.
It's so much better. There's no reason to go there outside of some outlet shopping. Like, it's kind of depressing, actually. And most Americans, it's hilarious that you can just like walk across the border from bridge to bridge and be in the United States and be in Canada. Great feature for everyone. But I did watch the game, and it was funny that, I mean, granted, like I mentioned, you know, Jaren Jackson and Paolo Banchero were not playing, but it's like the U.S. said, okay, we're going to go small ball too. And Canada's like, fine, but we're better at it. And like, they're switching Ant and Jalen Brunson and, you know, all these guys. And it's just not really the same. Like, Canada has too much size, too much athleticism, too much length. And ultimately, I mean, outside of the Zach Edey minutes, which, I mean, unfortunately for him, he was minus 15 in 2 minutes and 18 seconds. You cancel that. And wow, like, Canada outplayed them pretty damn well, you know, from top to finish, the defending, the way they're able to get into their offense. Shea was just a problem nonstop for that entire team. The way that he was just cooking Mikal Bridges, it was really impressive. And the way that he developed throughout the whole whole tournament, man, like he was really, really impressive. And I'm just excited to see what he does in the NBA, where it's kind of easier for him to score.
I mean, yeah, someone you didn't mention who wasn't there is Brandon Ingram. And that's because it didn't hurt them at all that he wasn't there, because he's not been helping them for the entire tournament. And like, you look at the American team, you mentioned it, they go small and it's like, okay, well, we can beat you at that. I think watching this entire tournament, you look at both of these North American teams that don't really have the bigs. You mentioned it was Zach Edey being a minus 15 in 2 minutes and 18 seconds. And granted, he's a kid. We're hoping that he gets better. Like there's a lot of sort of growth for a guy like Zach Edey that you know, hope to expect, especially in his, you know, next year in college. But you look at that sort of American team and it's like, why was that your strategy against the Canadian team? Like, what was Steve Kerr doing that you thought that would be successful? Going small was not going to work, but granted, they didn't have Jaren Jackson Jr., another guy who has not been great for them, mainly because they came into FIBA wanting to play this small ball thing. And I think, criticizing America for doing this, it's like, it's something that Canada can also look at, because, you know, shout outs to Dwight Powell, shout outs to Kelly Olynyk, who are your bigs. Those are still kind of small in terms of FIBA play. And we did see Canada, you know, at times get bullied. The Serbia game sort of stands out as one of those. Yeah. Brazil as well, some of those losses, and you're seeing the lack of size there. So I think, you know, the United States and Canada have a similar problem in the lack of bigs that they have. But what Canada has is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. What Canada has is FIBA Dillon Brooks, baby.
And there's no one really coming, you know, up in the system either, outside of Zach Edey. So do they call Sam D'Alembert? Do they see what he's up to? I'm looking, he's 42 years old. I mean, can he give you 10 minutes?
Come through. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I mean, Tristan Thompson just signed with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So he's currently an NBA player. But I think it's going to be difficult. And I was sort of looking at what maybe the Olympics roster can look like. Mm-hmm. And I find it difficult to not have a Zach Edey in there just for sheer size, and you're hoping he takes that next leap. Granted, you do have Leonard Miller, you do have Olivier, you have some of these guys coming in that are rookies that will be coming into the NBA, so we'll really see what they look like. Canada needs a big.
Yeah.
Canada needs a big. Hopefully Brandon Clark is, you know, healthy for the Memphis Grizzlies. Hopefully he comes back and he's healthy and he looks good. But granted, he's also someone who's 6'8". So yeah, bigs are going to be a big thing. But what Canada just did with the amount of talent that they have, they're looking good going into 2024. I'm excited about this team.
Yeah, 100%. Where were the biggest strides that the team made from the beginning of exhibition play to their last game against the US? What really stood out to you?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I think obviously, like, it's hard not to point to Dillon Brooks, who just had the spectacular game that he had. But you watch the sort of cohesion and the chemistry. I mean, a big thing, again, sort of pointing to the United States and also an issue for Canada, is when guys don't commit for many years, you're not seeing that continuity and you're not seeing that chemistry. Of course, Canada implemented this 3-year commitment, and guys like Jamal Murray and RJ Barrett are making these commitments, which is really big. So you're starting to see that cohesion and that chemistry really develop. You have a guy like Kelly Olynyk, who's always there, you know, Melvin Ejim, all of these, like Phil Scrub, all of these guys that are just there. So you see that chemistry, you see that continuity. But to me, the biggest stride that Canada made, not just throughout this tournament, but if you're looking in years past on why they had so many heartbreakers, why you're having those, you know, we remember the last time Canada tried to qualify and it was an absolute heartbreaker how they lost right there at the buzzer. To me, the biggest stride there is having a superstar in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who, you know, the ball gets to him and he just goes to work. I felt very similar. I tweeted out that, like, the last time I had a guy with cornrows who wore the number 2, and every time he was on the court, I felt confident that my team was going to pull through, was Kawhi Leonard. And it felt very similar. Obviously, they're not similar players, but it felt very similar in that when games get tight, and right now for the Raptors last year, we saw it. How many heartbreakers did they lose at the buzzer because they didn't have this guy? When games get tight and you need a guy for the ball to go to, and you need someone to carry through, like Shai Gilgeous did in that U.S. game, in particular, right? You have the crazy shot by Mikal Bridges, that just one of the most insane shots I've ever seen in my life, one of the most insane sequences I've ever seen. You're down 4 points with 4 seconds to go, and you happen to tie the game. That's incredible. But to just feel confident going into overtime because you know you have the best player, and then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander embarrasses Mikal Bridges on a level I don't think I've ever seen, where a health defender gets crossed over so badly he falls. Like, I've never seen that. And so you just know that, yeah, hey, Shai's time is overtime, and he took control of that game. He was the best player on the court, and he ended up winning it for you, which is something, as Raptor fans, we're very familiar with Kawhi Leonard, and we're very much seeing us not have, you know, in the last year. So watching Shai, I think that to me is the biggest stride, is just knowing that you have the best talent on the court on any given night, and that guy can pull through.
Yeah. Late in the fourth quarter, they're playing get your mismatch basketball, and RJ Barrett came up with Josh Hart. He's like, nope, don't want that. And then I believe it was Dylan Brooks came up with Austin Reeves. Like, nope, don't want that. I just want him. And he was kind of pointing at, not pointing, but he was saying, I want to go out to Mikal Bridges. And he hit that step back against him, the pull up two. And then, of course, in overtime, he hit him with that step back three. And man, oh man, like, and Bridges is a good defender, but this is like,
that's what he wanted him. Yeah. He was like, he said that he was the best perimeter defender, period, in the world, and he's going up against a guy who also maybe has a claim to that and wants to prove, hey, I'm him.
Yeah, seriously. So 31-5-5 on 50% shooting in the FIBA tournament, and the what stood out to me, and like, we know how much harder it is to score in FIBA just because of the size of the court, how teams can load up on you, and Shai dealt with that throughout the whole tournament. But I feel like, and we'll see how it goes in the NBA, but he learned so much about his playmaking skills and how to probe defenses. And we saw Pascal Siakam make huge strides in that this past season when he had like his stretch where he was playing like unreal, you know, first all NBA kind of basketball. And it's that pause, it's the surveying, it's the reading of the court. It's a different kind of level, and the playmaking that he showed that he could do, the way he's able to read angles and just make and bait defenders, like, that's what really stood out to me. Being able to do that, like, now you're getting into a Luka Doncic, LeBron James kind of level of execution and being like your own hub. Think just the high octane creation that he showed us in this tournament. It stands out in a way that I hope it ends up him being, you know, an MVP candidate at some point in his NBA career, because he clearly has the levels of scoring. He has the bag and everything like that. So I've just been really impressed by how he developed throughout the whole tournament. It was so cool to watch.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And honestly, I wasn't disappointed in him defensively. I hate to just continuously bring up the American team, but I think that that's obviously the team that Canada wants to, you know, that's the sort of gold standard, even if they finished fourth. And one of the things that I found very frustrating watching the American team, and, you know, Anthony Edwards is a star, and I think he proved himself in this run as well. But to me, it felt very much like the American guys were, it was very much your turn, my turn. And also the stars who scored, their job was to score, right? Like Anthony Edwards' job was to score. Whereas with Shai, we're watching him do a whole lot. I felt like he was very much a member of this team, even though it was his time late. You know, ISO Shai was something that you go to in key moments where you're going to need a basket. His, like, he's just so incredibly crafty. And so, like, watching him was, I don't know, he's got one of the prettiest games, I think, in the league, period. Yeah. I don't think that that's, like, controversial to say that he might, you know, arguably has the prettiest game in the league. There's Kyrie Irving, there's some other guys, but he's so incredibly crafty and beautiful. And the rebounding to me was something that, like, really, really stood out. It wasn't just his job to score. He got some key stops on the other end. Like, we saw some really key steals. We saw blocks from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He looked active and engaged defensively. It's not like it was an Austin Reeves situation where his job is to just be on the court and score, and he's going to get attacked every single opportunity on the other end. But also, did he lead the team in rebounds? Like, it would have been close. If not, like, he
might have actually,
incredibly active on that end as well. And to me, it's just like, having your leader, Boardman gets paid, not to compare him to Kawhi Leonard throughout the entire podcast, but Boardman does get paid, and there's a reason why. And to me, Shai was just incredibly active on all areas. He was so fun to watch. And I think the one thing, if you're concerned about Team Canada with this, in this particular run, of course we mentioned the bigs, but the other thing was, when Shai sat, the team really did struggle. They did not have a secondary ball handler playmaker that you would need. And Nikhil Alexander-Walker had some great games. He certainly did. But this team's over-reliance on Shai Tim Neal is quite a bit, but hey, you know that you have Jamal Murray coming through. You know you have guys, you know, Jamal Murray, a guy who made the 3-year commitment, but of course, due to injury and also having, you know, winning a championship, he wasn't available for this one, but hopefully he'll be available for 2024. He's a guy who's made the 3-year commitment, so I don't think there's any debate about whether or not he should make the team. It's just a matter of, will he be available for that? You kind of have an embarrassment of riches at the guard spot, and you also have maybe an Andrew Nembhard who can take a backup point guard role. So there's lots of sort of options for Canada, who really did struggle when Shea was not on the court as the, you know, primary playmaker.
Yeah. He did actually lead Canada in rebounds per game. It was at 8 per game. And then there was a big distance. RJ Barrett was at number, had 6 rebounds. So yeah, that's Shea there right there. The adaptability on offense, the adaptability on defense from this team, their execution got better and better as the tournament went on. And that's what Jordy said would happen. And I love the fact that Jordy said that this was going to happen, that they're only going to get better, you know, game by game. And we kind of saw their switching defense hit its peak in a sense. Well, like we saw what it could become in that Spain game. And then against Serbia, I mean, that was just a damn good team. But against the States, you know, they were able to switch damn near everything. And because they didn't have like an imposing center at the center position, Walker Kessler is a nice player, but he's not exactly that. And Canada, as you said, they're going to have to deal with this, you know, when they get to the Olympics as well. But that was a great showing from them on that side of the court. And then offensively, yes, they knew who they were and they found that out, right? So that was great to see from the Canadians. And then on Jordy Fernandez, what are your thoughts on his coaching performance? Obviously, it was good, but was there anything that stood out to you as like key moments, key times that he showed why he was in the position that he was?
Honestly, like to me, it was all of it. I think the ability to call guys out after the Brazil game, and you hear Dylan Brooks' comments afterwards, you know, saying like, Jordy Fernandez, like the way that he encourages the team, the way that he gets them to sacrifice like that. Dylan Brooks had, you know, dealt with quite a bit in the regular season, especially towards the end, with people really calling out his shot selection, with people calling out the way that he plays and, you know, whether it's a selfish way and all this other stuff. And so to hear him talk about sacrifice, to hear him talk about wanting to play like a team because of a head coach in Jordy Fernandez, I think that that's really important. I was listening to the Zach Lowe podcast the other day, and he told the story about how he told a story about how in Sacramento, where Jordy Fernandez is an assistant coach for Mike Brown, another assistant coach is just like, I like to follow him around everywhere. Like whatever Jordy is, I'm there because I want to learn from him, whether it's people management skills, whether it's game management skills, it doesn't matter. There's just so much to learn from a guy like Jordy Fernandez. And when you see him come in such limited time, this is not a guy who had, you know, we're talking about how important continuity is. This is not a guy who had that with this team. He came in at the 11th hour and came onto this team and had them do something that Canada has never done. And yeah, granted, he had, you know, the most talented roster Canada has put forth in a FIBA World Cup for sure. But getting these guys to buy into his system and play it, like we always talk about with players, you know, stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And we forget that, like, that's an important thing for coaches as well, to come in and step in and be able to get these guys to buy. And I think what he did was incredibly impressive. You know, getting guys to learn his system, fit into his system, and being able to, you know, the reason why you say stay ready, not so you don't have to get ready, is because you're going to be thrown into a game and you need to fit in with what's happening on that court. And you need to be good. Like, there's just a couple of things that you have to be able to manage when you're coming into a game. And to me, it's very similar for a coaching staff as well, to come in and be able to fit in to the roster that you have, be able to adapt to the style of play of guys that you have, but also bring in your system as well in such limited time as you're competing for a medal. What he did was just incredibly impressive. And there's not enough good things that I can say about him.
Yeah. Dylan Brooks, after the USA game, he had said that, you know, about Jordy, says he believes in us, great schemes, found ways to get NBA guys to come play. So he's talking about, you know, they're doing this for free, and he got guys to buy into the system and want to be part of the program. And he also said one of the best coaches I've ever had. And on the other side, Jordy said, this is what it looks like when you let Dylan Brooks play. He said that after the USA game. So obviously, you know, Dylan's not going to have 39 points every single game, but he was, there was like the give and take with the... there's a give and take with a player and a coach, right? Like you ask them to do this, but you also have to give them some room to grow into, you know, get into their bag, at least on the offensive end. And he found that balance with Dylan, and he was doing that with most of the players. And he talks about, you know, calling players out, but also they're still competing for him. They want to compete for him. They like him. That's going to be a huge component of what Jordy Fernandez is as he goes forward in his NBA coaching career. I have no doubt that at some point he will be an NBA head coach. And being able to, like, you know, a lot of coaches, it's like they got either got the player coach relationship side down, so they get the buy-in from that side, or maybe it's more of a schemes thing, and they're able to get buy-in that way because they're so creative. It seems like he's going to be able to get a bit of both worlds, and that is a recipe for a huge, hugely successful NBA head coach. And also, he's so young, and I think he relates to players really well. I do believe he has got a philosophy or a psychology degree in his basket there. So he's able to connect with people, and I think all the players appreciate that as well. So he did a bang-up job. And now going to, the roster. So you'd mentioned a few names before. I think they should look at Corey Joseph a little bit. So he had a back injury, and I'm not sure if it was just that. That's the reason why he wasn't with the World Cup team, but Andrew Nembhard, yes. But if we're looking to go to Paris and to win games, want some experience, could use some more experience on this team. And I think that's a route that they should go. But Andrew Nembhard, O'Shea Brissett, Brendan Clark, you mentioned Andrew Wiggins. Where are you with the three-year commitment, right, versus just fielding the best roster they can possibly get in Paris? It's a tricky one. But also Nick Nurse is supposed to be the coach too within this 3-year commitment, and we saw what happened. So rules are made to be broken.
Yeah, you know, there we go. I think you want a medal, and unfortunately, when it comes down to it, to medal you need your best players. I don't think you can turn your nose up at Andrew Wiggins because he didn't make the commitment. I do think that you have to, like, what you have here with a guy like Jamal Murray, of Jamal Murray's caliber, making that commitment is so huge for the future of Canada basketball. RJ Barrett has been in this program since he was, I don't know, his dad is the general manager, but he's been in this program for for so long. Kelly Olynyk has been in this program for so long. Like, a lot of these NBA players that you have been doing this for a really long time, and you want to reward that. So I completely understand people who have taken the stance of, you got to set some sort of boundary there so that you're not setting the precedent that, yeah, you don't get to, you know, you don't have to commit for 3 years and then you can just join whenever. But at the same time, if you do want a medal and you're going up against the LeBron James and the Stephen Currys, apparently,
the Avengers, in
2024, the Avengers coming together to stop Dylan Brooks. I mean, give Dylan Brooks, you know, a Medal of Honor Canada, because how did he manage to pull that one off? If you, if you're going against that level of talent, I'm sorry, get the best guys. Like, I want to see Canada medal. And unfortunately, I think that means you need to rely on guys like an Andrew Wiggins, like a Brendan Clark, like guys who have not committed to this program for 3 years, but, you know, have shown up.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the 3-year commitment that they asked for from players, I think it was more about creating continuity. So a case like this, where they just did a World Cup, I think they did max out their potential in a good way, that they got as much as they could get out of this roster. And from there, I mean, it is still about winning. So what are the flaws on the team? Well, they could use some backcourt depth, and also they could use some more size. And, you know, you bring in a point guard, it's going to shore up so much more. We saw, like, how you mentioned earlier, how bad they were when Shea was off the court. Obviously, Jamal Murray is going to help with that too. But hey, why not add an actual backup point guard? And also, you know, maybe now Jamal can play a little bit off ball, because you need his scoring, you need his shooting. And then maybe it is a Brendan Clark, a Andrew Wiggins, more size. Like, we know that the team isn't going to be as big as they'd like to be against certain matchups, but you can max out on what you're good at. And that is athleticism and scoring and defense. And I think it's their job as a front office or a program to get the best roster possible for this huge moment for Canada basketball. And I think that's just kind of how it has to go. So if it's Melvin Ejem, if it's Phil Scrub, Trayvell Haynes, like, it kind of is what it is. You respect the guys at the commitment that they made, but this is about winning in the end. And you can't leap up this opportunity to put Canada basketball on the map and to a further degree.
No, I completely agree. Now, I was going through it yesterday, because for starters, this is a good problem to have. We're talking about having too much talent that we don't know who doesn't, you know, who won't make the roster. Like, that is from where Canada basketball was even a few years ago to where it is right now. I think this is an incredibly good problem to have. You have guys like Shaedon Sharpe, Andrew Nembhard, Ben Mathurin that are coming up through the ranks as well. You just have so much talent in Canada that this is a great problem to have. But I was going through it. I was going through the roster. So there are, you know, 12 guys who make the final roster, right? 12 guys who are on the team.
Yeah.
Right now, Canada has 7 NBA players on that roster. So there are 5
guys. That was their rotation.
that was the rotation for a reason, right? Like, and so I think the NBA players, they make it on, right? Like, Kelly Olynyk matters too much to this program. He's the captain of the team. He makes it on. I think Nikhil Alexander-Walker, of course, with Shea, makes it on. Like, the NBA players, who else? Who have a name? Dylan Brooks, RJ Barrett, of course.
Powell.
Dwight Powell, of course, right? So, like, Lujan, so those guys make it on, of course. I mean, the defense with Lou. Okay, can I just say,
please,
Dwight Powell going to sit and then you see Dort coming in? I'm like, look at this. That is just monstrous.
Feisty, so man. He's incredible. A feisty dude.
That is like, if I were on the other team, because, like, you know, like the gif of, like, you know, Kawhi Leonard going to sit and LeBron, like, exhaling, Kawhi Leonard coming back and LeBron, like, taking a big sigh because, like, oh, God, I have to deal with this now. You don't have that exhale moment if you're on the opposing wing going up against a Dylan Brooks or a Lujan Dort. I don't know why I'm calling him by his full name, but it's fun. Yeah, so I was looking through it. So you have, like, all of the NBA players make it. And then, of course, Jamal Murray makes it. Like I said, we're talking about 3-year commitment guys. He's one who did it. And then you have Andrew Wiggins. I think just in terms of talent, he makes it. I think you need a backup point guard. I mentioned Andrew Nembhard. You mentioned Corey Joseph. I'd be fine with either one. That's talent. Like, Corey Joseph, of course, like, just having that veteran leadership, that presence, an NBA champion, a guy who's been doing this for so long, who's been a part of this Canadian program also for an incredibly long time. I'd be totally down with having Corey Joseph in there. And then I think you need another big, and that to me is where Brandon Clarke comes in, but again, depends on you know, his health. And already, what did I name? Four Canadian NBA players. So that leaves one additional spot. I think size is really important. So maybe Zach Edey makes it just off of that alone. But that also, you are left with a starting five. What does Canada do? Who do you bench? You can't bench Andrew. Maybe you bench Andrew Wiggins because he didn't make the commitment. Maybe that's sort of the punishment there because you're starting Dylan Brooks. Like, what do you do? You have to start Jamal. You have to start Shea. You have to start a big. Right? So Dwight Powell starts. Who's your big? You got to start some big, right?
There's someone you haven't mentioned yet. RJ?
I said Shea. Oh, you have to start RJ.
Do you?
Right? Like, don't start RJ, you start Dylan Brooks and you start Andrew Wiggins and you bring RJ off the bench.
Put your best players in the starting five, like, I think as they've found out their identity, if it is going to be like you have your pressure point players, as in like a Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, a Jamal Murray, and then you have someone like, oh, I don't know, Andrew Wiggins, who has been succeeding in this role as a second side driver, shooter.
Yeah,
I like the idea of him doing that role instead of RJ Barrett, because I think there's a bit more playmaking with Andrew Wiggins and also just a bit more pop. Yeah, absolutely. A bit more reliable.
Definitely. I think, I in terms of talent, I'm right there with you. But also, hey, if you're going to bring in guys that have not made a commitment, maybe you bring them in, put them on the roster, but maybe you prioritize or you reward the guys who have. Like, I think they're.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Like, you know, politics comes into play in that sense, not in the sense that his father is a general manager of the
I was going to say, maybe if Rowan Barrett's like, excuse me, my son's coming off the bench.
Hey, RJ, you know, is also like, what, 23 years old? He can also take a major lead this season, right? Like, I think the RJ that we saw this summer shouldn't be the RJ that we see next summer. If, you know, he should take another step. That's what you're expecting from guys who are 23 years old. And so, like, there's a lot. But, like, again, embarrassment of riches and a great problem to have. This is not an issue that we'd be talking about before. And I'm also just, like, excited about the idea of, like, you know, I don't know what the Jurassic Park for Canada basketball would be called, but just to have those all over the country, right, during the Olympic Games, just to have everyone watching the games, whether Scotiabank is filled inside and outside, or, you know, whether you have them in, you, I don't know, City Center Square, what is it called? I don't know.
City Center, yeah.
Like, whether you
the
just
Go
have
Transit Station?
Yes. Right? Like, you should, I mean, you should have, like, hey, there are going to be two Mississauga guys on that roster. The Sauga City, stand up, as we've been saying. Hamilton should have its own thing. We should be having this all over Canada. I'm really excited for, you know, the growth of Canada basketball, and, you know, not to diminish what the women are doing too. Kia Nurse is good. Like, there's just so much talent on both sides, and we're just in such a lucky space. Shout out to the Alexander family, because they've given us so much of our talent.
We didn't even mention Kyle Alexander.
No,
we didn't.
I don't know if he's related to the rest of the Alexanders, but just in case.
yeah Make sure you mention that. Yes. There's a 7-hour time difference. No, 6 hours time difference from Paris and Toronto. You would imagine that the NBA guys, Canada, USA, they're going to get the best time slots, right? Probably the ones that would allow, you know, people in North America to watch the game. So that's something to keep in mind too. I mean, it won't be 4:45 all the time for the Canadians. So that'll be good to see. It probably get some decent times. And from that standpoint, hey, fill up the GO Transit stations, city centers, whatever. Fill them up, because it's a great moment for the whole Canada basketball. And as you mentioned, hey, women's team, they've been holding it down for a long time. That's why, you know, unique stuff and new stuff is always more fun. So there's over there doing their thing, and now this is kind of the new flavor. The men's team is actually standing up and doing what they were supposed to do for so many years. Okay, Toronto Raptors.
Yeah. There's a team that, you know, we actually cover.
Yeah. Hasn't felt like that for a little while, because anytime a conversation comes up, it's like, they will be a team next season, and we will see how it goes. But as we know, you know, they finished in the play-in tournament, and they didn't win. So that's how that went. Nick Nurse is gone. And now the latest rumors, when you hear the Toronto Raptors, it's always associated with Dame Lillard. That's just how it is. It's like, that's the only reason why the Raptors are coming up in a lot of cases now, is that, Shams is talking on a broadcast. He's like, you know, so if a team like the Toronto Raptors, yes, Dame Lillard would not show up there because he only wants to play for the Miami Heat. It just keeps on coming up. But it does also inform why, you know, things like Pascal Siakam, Gary Trent Jr., the rumored extension, why Pascal Siakam hasn't been A, traded, or B, given an extension. It helps us perhaps have an idea of why that hasn't happened yet, because probably a lot of dominoes are in the air. And one of those is, can they convince Dame Lillard that he wants to play for the Toronto Raptors? I don't know, but it does make things make a lot more sense. Is it kind of like that? Like, do you feel like they're still kind of circling the waters on this?
I would have to imagine they are. Like, to me, it was not a surprise. You said, you know, Shams was just like, you know, the Toronto Raptors. He mentioned Toronto twice. He didn't mention a single other team. Mm-hmm. Like, I find that pretty curious. But also, I think when you look at it, and I've been sort of hammering this drum for a long time, is when you look at it, Damian Lillard, who is a superstar, I don't think people recognize just how good he was last season. Last season might have been one of his best years. He was so incredibly good.
You saw Shay.
I said now Shay. Dame. Oh, yeah. Dame.
Yeah. Like, that's what it looks like.
Three-point shooting, spacing, like just what you can have with a Damian Lillard. Dame was an absolute superstar. So, you know, his stock is obviously going to be as high as it can be. But he's 33 years old, and he's signed on for 4 years. So I think that sort of changes a little bit of leverage. Now, looking at it, looking at the NBA landscape, there aren't a lot of teams that have picks, especially the good teams, right? You look at the Milwaukee Bucks, they gave up everything to get Jrue Holiday. You look at the Lakers, they gave up everything to get Anthony Davis. The Clippers gave everything to get Paul George. And all of these contenders don't have a lot of picks, and they also don't have a lot of young guys who can be enticing in terms of making a package. Or the money to sort of give up to get back another guy. Their hands are tied in terms of making a Damian Lillard trade. Now, a lot of the teams that do have the picks, the Utah Jazz, the Oklahoma City Thunder, these teams that have just been collecting picks, how many of them are actually willing to trade up youth and their young guys to get a win now player? Because, hey, does that make sense when your team has, you know, Giddy and Chet Holmgren who are like, what,
and you're still building too. You don't know what you are yet. Yeah.
You're still building. And here's the thing. GMs, their primary objective is to keep their job. And the best way to keep your job is to not tie it to a 33-year-old when you can tie it to a bunch of 21-year-old superstars. It's a very rare thing to do. So I think that looking at the actual landscape of teams who can make a Damian Lillard trade, have the assets to do so, and also can believe that after they make the trade, they are still going to be contenders. That is so incredibly important. There are very few teams who can do it. I think Utah Jazz actually is one of the teams who can, because they clearly want to make that win now move. So they might be in that conversation. I think the Raptors can be in that conversation because, as you mentioned it, you have Pascal Siakam, who will be 30 by the time the next playoffs roll around. You have Jakob Poeltl, who is 28. OG Anunoby, who's now 26. He's entered that sort of now we're talking, you should be in your prime. You should have entered that next stage in your career. So they have a lot of the older guys, but they have young guys. We've talked about what direction they're going to take. They can pivot to just the young guys' direction, or they can pivot to just the older guys' direction. So they're one of the few teams that can make that move. Miami, of course, one of the few teams that can make that move because they have a young guy in Tyler Hero, but they're on Jimmy Butler's timeline, and Jimmy Butler is, I think, older than Dame. So there are very few teams that realistically can make a Damian Lillard trade, and I think the Raptors are on that short list, so it does not surprise me that their name has been brought up. And that's exciting because those reports about him not showing up to training camp and all that other stuff that has now been refuted, because that report comes out, people need to send out
another one came. Which one are you talking about? Because another one came out yesterday, but yes.
Yeah, saying that he will show up. Yeah. That was the damage control one, because that is an empty promise. There was no way that a guy was not going to show up. When you have 4 years left on your contract, does that mean you're not going to show up for 4 years? Because you're 33. So does that mean we're not going to see you play basketball again until you're 37 and, you know, magically get your next contract? No. So that was obviously an empty promise that was never actually going to happen. And so it makes sense that that was walked back the next day, because that's not true. You need more people. I don't believe you.
In the last year of his contract, which is a player option year, he's making $63 million. I wonder if he's going to opt in.
I wonder, the cap might just be $1 billion. He opts out because something else has happened. No, but he's obviously not, there's too much money at stake. And also, that's never who Damian Lillard is, right? He's been people are he might just do a James Harden and he might just do this and that and third. We've watched Damian Lillard for 12 years of his career at this point, and he's never been that guy. He's not just all of a sudden going to be that player. I don't see it. I think these reports are just, trying to scare teams away, but they don't hold much weight, because when you're a superstar and you sign on for 4 years, you've given up your leverage. It's the reason why LeBron always signs short-term contracts. The way to maximize your leverage as a superstar in this league is sign on for short-term, not long-term.
I wonder if he's kicking his agent a little bit, because you look at the numbers of his contract and it seems like the agent in the working of the deal, he was projecting, what the cap is going to look like year by year by year. So from that standpoint, good job. But now also you've tied Dame down for a long ass time and you're in this predicament now. When Kawhi Leonard became a Toronto Raptor, he was in a contract year. He had to show that he was still that guy. And obviously he did. But for Dame, we already know he's that guy. And he feels I only have so many years left as my prime years in the NBA. And I devoted so many of them to the Portland Trailblazers. And, we were just middling in mediocrity for that many years. And I only want to go to Miami. That's the only place. I am dictating things now. That's what it seems like he's saying. And if the Raptors are still interested in getting his services, despite that very fact. And I think that must mean something that Miami, these reports about Miami being the only team he wants to go to, it seems like that has to be true. But what happens if the deal just isn't appetizing for the Blazers? It seems like they need like a third team or something like that to be in play for a deal to, you know, to turn out where they're getting the value of Damian Lillard. Like, it's a really tricky situation. And the fact that, you know, maybe does he report to training camp? Does he not? Like, yes, he might report, but what if it's like a James Harden kind of thing or a Ben Simmons kind of thing? He's just unhappy. He's not that guy, but he's probably saying like, I only have this many years. Like, I'm not going to be playing around with the rest of my NBA years during my prime. We've seen him just sit for no freaking reason for the past few seasons. I don't doubt that he's very healthy. He's got to be healthy as hell.
No, that was him being a company player. Like, to me, that is him being a company man. His team wanted to get a better draft pick, and so he sits out, right? Like, that was obviously team tanking. I do think maybe if he returns back to Portland, he has zero interest in playing there. He knows he can't compete for anything. He knows he can't win.
Yeah.
But if they make a trade, I think the team that trades for him, even if it's not Miami, is a team that has aspirations of, you know, contention aspirations.
Sure.
And I don't think that a 33-year-old who has never won anything, you know, like got swept in the only conference finals he ever went to, I don't know that that's someone who's going to turn up their nose at that, especially at 33. And hey, you play well, maybe you work your way into, you know, building your trade value up and your new team can trade you if that's the case. But as Raptor fans, this is not new to us, right? Like, you had with Kawhi Leonard, you make that trade every single time. OKC with Paul George, he didn't want to go there, but like, he re-signed there, right? Like, he wanted to go to LA specifically. He re-signed there. Granted, yes, he left to LA, but they were able to get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They do that trade 10 times out of 10. And as Raptor fans, guess what? Kyle Lowry, greatest Raptor of all time, had no interest in being a Toronto Raptor. He didn't want to, especially if he was going to back up Steve Nash, which was sort of the reports at one point before Steve Nash decided, no, he was going to go to LA. Yes, very much thank you. Oh my goodness. And the Raptors pivoted to getting a Kyle Lowry at that time. Could have also drafted a Damian. We almost had a situation where you had Kyle and Dame. But you trade for Kyle Lowry. He had zero interest. He was going to be out the first chance he got. His contract was coming up in 2 years. And guess what? He re-signs and has won a championship with the team and has gone down as the greatest Raptor of all time. It's not new that guys come here and don't want to be here. We've read Player Tribune article from Patrick Patterson where he says the exact same thing. This is not something that's new, but they come here. The city's hard not to love. This fan base is hard not to love. And if this team is actually competing and fighting for things that are good, I think it would, like, his fit alongside Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby would be so,
he fits like a glove. He's even got a rolling big. He's good.
He's even got Jakob Pertl. I even forgot that we traded for center. Oh my goodness. Yeah, the Raptors, we're right there. We just need a point guard. But I think that, like, he would be fine here. I just don't know if the Raptors make that move, because why hasn't it happened? If it, if it was going to, why hasn't it happened already? But also, who knows?
Yeah. Maybe OG's our point guard. He was at Steph Curry's basketball camp with a few other NBA players. Maybe he's next up-and-coming point guard for the Toronto Raptors. At least they could have someone that would make someone go over on a screen, right? Because right now they don't have too many guys that could do that.
True. That three-point shot was looking nice in those little clips that we got to see, too.
Indeed. Wrapping up very shortly, Dennis Schroeder. So, World Cup MVP, averaged 19 points and 6 assists. And the conversation around who starts for the Toronto Raptors, it's still ongoing. Is Scottie Barnes playing point guard? Or is it going to be Dennis Schroeder playing the point guard position and Scottie's like the backup kind of default? Or how is it all going to work? I mean, it's hard to pinpoint what it's going to be. But on NBA Today, yesterday actually, Malika Andrews asked him, why did you go to Toronto? And when he said Darko, and also he said that it was intriguing to be able to, I'm paraphrasing, to be able to ball handle more, to have a similar role that he had with Germany, where he was the number one option, right? That's what he said to Malika. And he's already said something very similar to Akil Augustine a few months ago in Vegas. So to me, it seems like he's going to be the starting point guard, or he's been told that. I don't know. But where do you land on? Well, I guess, actually, his Germany play, does that make you feel a little bit better about how he could look in the Raptors as a point guard, or has kind of things been unchanged because of the FIBA game is so different? And spacing is different.
Oh. Yeah, spacing is definitely different. That's my thing is like, Dennis Schroeder, have you watched it? Based on those comments, that's my one question. But the FIBA game is really different. Also, the Germany team is built in a much different way than the Toronto Raptors. Are they have more shooters? That's not something that he's going to have here. And I think the conversation about whether or not he starts comes down to what is the shooting going to look like if he's on the court with Pascal Siakam, Jakob Poeltl, and Scottie Barnes. But I think that as for his FIBA game, like he's a 29-year-old guard or 30-year-old guard. Like we kind of know what he is. I'm not sort of totally changed by what I saw in FIBA because the game is so different because the way the Germany squad is built is so different. But you're starting to see some of the reasons why you want a guy like that. We haven't had a guy who can get downhill in the same way. He was able to just create something sometimes out of nothing. He was also, for Germany, their go-to guy in the clutch, right? Like Franz Wagner, people can say that he was their best player. That tournament, I'm not going to argue against them. But when it came down to it in the fourth quarter, when the game got tight and you needed someone to get you a basket, like he was able to do in that gold medal game, it went to Dennis Schroeder and he was their guy to pull it out. And the Raptors really struggled with having something like that. That's the reason why they lost so many games in the clutch last year. So like, I'm excited about that. I'm excited about having a guard who can do something that we just haven't had. We haven't had a guy who can get downhill in the same way. We haven't had something like that who can really sort of change the pace. Also, if he comes off the bench, that's someone who kind of changes the way that this team looks. I'm excited about the things that Dennis Schroeder can do. I don't know that he's going to be your go-to guy when you have Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, and Scottie Barnes on the team. But I'm excited for him and I'm excited for the way that he can fit in. You just need more shooting. You need more spacing. And hopefully he can, I don't know, he can bring in some of that. Maybe he has a good three-point shooting year.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he starts?
Based off of his comments on Darko, I think that maybe... Do you think that there was like a promise made ahead of time? Here's the thing. I think if he comes off the bench, there's benefit in that you have more shooting in your starting lineup. Mm-hmm. But so many answers to the Raptors next season is what leap has Scottie made? That I think answers all sorts of things. So Scottie can be your primary ball handler and Scottie can get the paint touches to get those driving kick actions going. If Scottie has improved his 3-point shot, so you have guys sometimes going under on screens. If you can have Scottie take that next leap, then certainly, but playmaking is so important. I think you need a point guard just as badly as you needed a center. So for that reason, I think maybe Dennis starts, but then your shooting becomes really bad because, hey, maybe OG at the Steph Curry camp has improved his 3-point shot. He's obviously one of the team's best 3-point shooters, but he's also made so much of his damage in the corners. And I think to be a traditional floor spacer, you need to be a good movement shooter. You need to be able to, that entire arc needs to be yours. It can't just be somewhere deep in the corner. You can't just be spotting up.
Yeah.
You need OG to just do a little bit more. And so you're really looking for growth from OG Anunoby and you're looking for growth from Scottie Barnes. And that to me answers every question about the Toronto Raptors. There's not a single question that doesn't come down to what step has OG Anunoby taken, what step has Scottie Barnes taken.
Yeah. If you take out the game against Latvia where he shot 4-26, that was pretty brutal. And also 0 of 8 from 3. He shot 38% from 3 and 51% from the field. Now, obviously, I'm saying you take out a game. The game happened. It is something to consider. He was, hitting some pull-up threes, and it's all FIBA. It's a different circumstance. He was hitting some catch-and-shoot threes. He was a corner spacer for them. He was their game manager. And if in fact that he's going to be, taking on that role with the Toronto Raptors, I think there are some pros and cons to it. The spacing is going to be very different. I like the idea of having someone who can just get to the paint and, 3.7 seconds like he did against Serbia, where there's 25 seconds left on the clock. And within 3.3 seconds, he was at the basket and he was cooking up some good stuff.
TJ Ford, who's the last point guard that the Raptors had that could do something like that? TJ Ford? Like, it's not Probably. Olay, it's not Kyle Lowry. It's like, I think we go back that far.
Seriously. And drives per game last year, they were 17th, and it was primarily Fred and it was Pascal. They both averaged 13, I see here. And just getting that initial paint touch, especially within this 0.5 basketball system that they're going to be trying to utilize. And his familiarity with Darko, just like the style that he wants to play. I mean, there's some synergy there that could help the Raptors be a lot better offensively, but the shooting, of course, is still going to be a limitation. And, you know, Pascal Siakam, is he able to be a better three-point shooter? He was decent from the corner actually last season. So maybe there's some creativity that Darko does with putting Pascal in the corner as opposed to other spots on the court. But from, you know, looking from the outside, looking in, if you have Scotty Barnes and Dennis Schroeder on the court together, there's a lot of playmaking right there. So how do you implement a system that, you know, with some cutting, with some off-ball movement, with some creativity, obviously, that Darko is hopefully going to have. You know, it's interesting, actually, just, I was thinking about this, that Jordy and Darko are both known as player coaches, but Jordy is the one that didn't get the job with the Raptors. And it makes you think that after what we just saw him do with Team Canada, like, what did he draw on the board for Masai and Bobby that made him go like, I like this. I like this. It's interesting.
They said he wasn't their favorites going into it. You know, they didn't mention that he wasn't their favorites at any point going into it. So I think that, like, I think a lot of people were sort of looking at what Jordy did in obviously the FIBA World Cup and being like, all right, you got big shoes to fill, Darko. Like, sure. You got to prove that this is, but I think there's a reason why he was picked. There's a reason why Dennis Schroeder picked the Raptors, right? Like, the Raptors wanted to get a Malcolm Brogdon last year, weren't able to get him because he chose another team. And you have, you know, someone like Dennis Schroeder, World Cup MVP, picking the Toronto Raptors. I think there's a reason for it. I'm actually really excited to see what Darko does. There's clearly something special in him that has a lot of, you know, people picking him.
So has your feelings changed on the Raptors next season? Last time we talked, I think it was after Fred was, he signed with the Houston Rockets. I mean, both of us are kind of like, what the hell's going on here? But you look at their depth chart. So obviously there's more depth. You can believe that Christian Coloco might have like a stable backup center role. Grady Dick is now in play. Maybe early on in the season, he's spending more time with the 905, but I would think by, you know, the new year or so, he's probably going to be spending a decent amount of time with the Toronto Raptors, and he could be a rotation player. Jalen McDaniels, huge fan of him, and Precious Achiuwa. Those are just some names that could be coming off the bench for the Toronto Raptors, and then obviously Gary Trent Jr. or Dennis Schroeder, but there's Chris Boucher, there's Otto Porter Jr. I was looking at clips from Media Day last year, and one thing that Thad mentioned was, wow, look at all of our depth. We have so much depth. But I think it's a better reason to say that in this upcoming season that the depth is that much better. So
if Nick Nurse never heard that. Nick Nurse did not hear that soundbite.
Absolutely not. But, you know, 10 deep. It's actually, I can see them going 10 deep game by game. And, you know, Eastern Conference, it's kind of a bit of an influx right now because of the Philly situation, because of the Miami Heat situation with Dame Lillard. So there's only a few
Boston situation.
That, yeah, for sure.
Kristaps Porzingis is hurt. You know, Kristaps Porzingis did not play in the World Cup for a reason. And that's going to, and they don't have a playmaker either. Speaking of a team that, you know, maybe struggling there.
Marcus Smart trading him. I don't know, man. I'm not sure how that's going to go.
I don't love that at all. Yeah. Like, I thought Boston had the best offseason last year. I think that they had not my favorite offseason, I'll say that.
So what are the sure things in the Eastern Conference? It's what, Milwaukee and the Cavs? Is that it?
Yeah.
And I put New York.
Milwaukee waving an Antetokounmpo brother after Giannis had the comments that he had, signing him and then waving him the next day. I don't know. I wonder if Masai's making some calls there as well.
100%. So, I mean, the Raptors are 4 games out of 6th last season. Considering how bad the situation was, considering like the lack of buy-in from the roster, you put that along with the new system, their defense is going to be good. There's something that could make, there's a reason to believe that they're going to be a little bit better than probably people think, right? I believe the projection is 36 wins for them, 36.5 wins. There's more reasons to think that they're going to be above that if they do indeed, you know, try to make the playoffs next season versus, you know, them not being that team and, you know, finishing the bottom six.
Yeah, for sure. I think that Vegas win total projection really comes down to nobody knowing what the Raptors' direction is. So it's like they're, could be a point where Pascal and OG are gone, and then you are left with a team that is not going to win very many games. Or there could be, you know, a scenario where everybody's back, and then maybe you're fighting for a play-in team, which, like, Playing for What is something that Masai Ujiri has said before. hopefully it's not against DR DeRozan. I think that so much is in flux for this team. I feel a little bit more confident. I love the fact that they brought in Jamma Malela. I'm just riding the high of Team Canada. Feel just a little bit more optimistic about basketball in general. And maybe Lillard rumors. Maybe I'm just trying to be happy until he gets traded. There's always a little bit of hope. And the rest of the Eastern Conference is kind of crumbling around us. So why not enjoy it? Why not? If you can't enjoy your team, enjoy the demise of other teams. That's the message I want to leave everybody with today.
It's beautiful. What a way to end it. If everyone else gets worse, then our mediocrity could, put us up there. Right? And I mean, last season they shot, 32% from three. If they're getting decent looks, like how much worse can it be? Really? Like it can't be that much worse. So, better health, better shooting from assorted players. They're in the top 20 and 3-point percentage. That is a huge difference for their outcome offensively and also in their half court. And I think they're going to run. I think they're going to be a good transition team. They're
going to
be a good defensive team and buy in.
To me, it's buy in. Yeah. One of the things about Dennis Schroeder that I actually think is I kind of appreciate is the fact that he was like, Maxi Kleber, no, sorry. You can't join Germany because you did not commit. You were not here. And we're going to run with this. And to me, that shows from a leader, a level of it doesn't matter if you're an NBA player. It doesn't matter if you're better than half of these guys on here. Like if you're not committing, if you're not doing the work that needs to be done in order to contend right now, then you're not going to play in. And I think a level of buy-in and a leader, a level of no, this is what it's going to be from a leader on your team. And he's a veteran in this league. He's probably the second or third oldest guy on this team, maybe behind Thaddeus Young and Otto Porter. Otto Porter's young. He might be the same age as him. Otto Porter just seems old.
He's 29.
He's 29 years old. I think they're the same age.
They are.
Otto Porter he just feels a little, I don't know. He came into the league as a veteran.
He's 30, sorry.
He's
30,
right? I think they're 30. Both probably 93 born players. So they're probably about the same age. Maybe Chris Boucher is older. Also 93. No need to, anyway, but my point is having someone who sort of has that level of buy-in because it felt like so many guys, including the coach, were checked out for parts of last season. And I think you want guys who are excited about playing basketball and also committed to winning and committed to doing the work it takes to win. And maybe you have that in Dennis Schroeder. I'm just trying to be optimistic. I don't know. Again, if you can't celebrate your team, laugh at everybody else.
I mean, Darko's going to walk around just smiling all the time. That has to help the vibes in some capacity.
Right? And Brady Dick, he's just going to make TikToks and dance, and Scottie Barnes is going to be on the TikToks and dance. I just feel like you might just have better vibes. Grady Dick changed us for the better, did he not?
He must have. Imagine Shea tells Andrew Wiggins that he can't be on the team because he didn't commit. Team Canada, I mean. Wouldn't that be funny?
I love you, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, but I want a medal.
All right, y'all. That was a lot of fun. Thanks so much, Aman. Anything brewing? Anything cooking? Anything coming up for you?
Check out Pros and Claws. We are coming out with some more stuff. That's me and Usad who do it on Substack. Nice. So really do check that out because we're coming out with some more stuff and having some YouTube shorts. And we'll load all of that on our Twitter. So you'll get to see all of that good stuff.
Beautiful. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the rest of your summer. The Raptors are around the corner. 2 weeks away.
So...
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.